This is Carte Blanche, the podcast. One story every day that matters. Delve into the issues that impact you. Whether you're in need of a better understanding of the world around you or simply seeking inspiration or unique perspectives, you'll find it all here.
The ocean covers 70% of the Earth's surface, making it the largest living space on our planet. It's a vast world, largely unexplored, and has the ability to both soothe and terrify. Embracing both these on a daily basis is Zandile Ndlovu, lovingly known by many as the Black Mermaid. Conservationist, activist, filmmaker, author, and South Africa's first black female freediving instructor, Zandi has now added one more title to her long list of achievements, Penguin Warrior. We sit down with this formidable woman of the water to find out more about life under the sea, embracing fear, and changing lives. Hi, Zandi. Welcome to Carte Blanche, the podcast. First of all, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into our chat, I understand you're currently in the US. Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing there?
Yeah, no, it's been such an incredible year and the US has really opened up new opportunities for me. So this trip was primarily to secure new speaking engagements, but also grow the public relations around Zandi's song, my children's book, which launched in March this year. And New York was, of course, Climate Week, having the discussions that we need to be having about how we move the world forward in the protection of our natural worlds. And I'm back in DC and just tying up loose ends of the trip. But also DC is a powerful place in proximity to the White House and proximity to some of the most incredible work that's being done around conservation in the States. And so it's just finding new friends across the world.
Fantastic. Now, we'll get into your children's book a bit later, as well as the whole conversation. But first, I want you to tell us more about the Black Mermaid Foundation.
The foundation was started in June of 2020. I qualified as a freediving instructor, going on to become South Africa's first Black female freediving instructor. And in that moment was a realization that I don't necessarily want to work in a dive shop, but I do want to create opportunity for people to be able to access the water, especially in communities that I come from. And so that's how the Black Mermaid Foundation was founded. For me, the most important thing said, how do we create access to this ocean space, recognizing that proximity doesn't equate to access? And two, South Africa has a very hard history when it comes to these waters, these bodies of water around us. So how do we expand the narrative around who belongs in the water? And how do we somehow find a way to future-proof a world where there's more marine biologists of color? And so we're seeing more diverse representation in ocean-facing arenas, both in careers and sports, recreationally, in all ways, in a way that allows us to have ocean guardians that are diverse. And that's how the work started. We work in Langa in Cape Town, and we facilitate these educational snorkel excursions. And for most of our kids, it's their first time seeing beneath the surface of the water. And that is such a powerful work for us. But again, that work is varied, and we've been able to do the same work in different countries, in Madagascar and Sao Tome and Seychelles in the States. And it's been really incredible to just realize the power of being connected to our water bodies, because it allows us to be able to advocate powerfully, but also advocate differently for how we protect our natural spaces. Mm. So that's the foundation's work. To date, we've taken out over 400 kids, and I'm pretty sure it's a little number in some world, but for me, it's an entire world. As someone who grew up in Soweto, the idea that you could create this opportunity for children that live in townships remains such a driving force, because the ocean is an equalizer. She is where I found freedom, and I hope to be able to create that space for many kids as well.
The foundation, as well as your messaging, is that you place a lot of emphasis on representation. Just explain to our listeners a little bit about why representation matters, especially within the marine biology field, but also within the whole climate change conversation.
I mean, I often think that representation allows us to see ourselves in worlds beyond ourselves. So we live in worlds that assume, like, typical example, when I grew up, You could be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, a policeman. No one in my world even knew that you could live and work in the ocean space. But then again, there was a narrative in old South Africa around beaches that were accessible and who could go to what beach. And the more dangerous beaches happened to be in Black and brown communities. And so that changes any culture that you could have about water. Of course, when I started diving, everyone would say, why do you do white people things?
Yes.
And I'm like, they're not white people things. They are everybody things. And so my thing is representation allows us to envision a different future. It allows us to expand our internal narratives, and it allows us to challenge the beliefs that we grow up thinking are cultural identities when that's not true. Where I come from, the sea is a body of water that's over there. No one understands the amount of life that lives within her, but also no one understands that she regulates our climate. But also when we're having the discussion around climate, there's a disconnect. So how do we bring it all together? So for me, representation says, you belong in those waters too. They are yours too. And you need to show up for her protection as well.
But changing a person's view is quite a difficult thing to do. How do you go about approaching that conversation? How difficult has it been for you to get people to change their views on the ocean, on climate, on their relationship with nature as a whole?
That's such a powerful question. I believe in story. Like, I think stories are going to save us because stories allow us to imagine worlds that might not be ours right now, but we can travel in a possibility. So for me, it's a multiple prong approach. So the foundation is doing work that's physically taking young learners out into the water, and they get to see that for themselves, but they get to change their own stories for themselves. When I was young, we were told these stories about what lives in the water that would frighten us. We would be told about snakes, and we would be told about the bottom of the ocean is an ancestral space. You're not supposed to be there. There were so many narratives that caused fear instead of an invitation. And so when we go out into the water, and yes, there's fear in the beginning, but in the end, you can't get the kids out of the water. That's powerful because they change the narrative for themselves. And then they get to take it back to their communities. They can say, hey, that's not true. Hey, this is what I saw when I was there, because it's that first account experience. And so second, I moved into film. And again, it was for me a space of creating an invitation to these waters that are ours too. And what does it mean to not be able to witness the magic that lives in them because of our internal narratives, aside from the systemic? Could we expand our own views around these waters? And then I wrote a children's book, and the children's book is for 6 to 9 year olds. And it's pretty much that space of like reading competency, but also adding in that beautiful fundamental space of creating an invitation to the ocean while understanding the challenges around plastic pollution. And I think that's the thing about story, is that you tease it and you keep on introducing it in little and big ways.
Zandi's love for water didn't come naturally. In fact, a near-death experience in primary school could have so easily led her down a completely different path. Yet, as is now the norm for this inspiring diver, she simply took it all in her stride.
Speaking of the power of stories and changing how you view things, and in this particular case, your relationship with the ocean, I want you to take us back a little bit to when you were in grade 6. I understand that you had a near drowning experience, but despite this, you really have taken that on despite the dangers of water. You know, a lot of people would have just avoided bodies of water at all costs following an experience like that. So firstly, can you tell us a bit about what happened when you were in grade 6, but then also how you overcame this really very traumatic incident and essentially get back into the water, which I think not a lot of people would have done.
I always think that is the funniest story, but it's obviously not funny. So we arrive at our first multiracial school. It was PE. Our teacher says, everybody jump into the water. Do I know how to swim? No. Do I jump in at that moment? No. But then one of the girls in my classroom says, hey, Zandi, I know you can't swim, so you get on my back and I will swim us across and back. And she swims us over to the deep end. And as she makes a turn, I fall off her back, but then she leaves, right? And so I'm in the water, I'm fighting for my life. And my teacher finds me and she pulls me out the water and she's trying to get the water out of my body. And I just remember just like coughing it up. And yes, there was fear, but in my head in that moment, because my sister and I still went on to signed up for the swimming team. There were no swimming lessons in our school per se. That meant that every single swimming competition were the last ones in. Like we were the last ones because you're just kind of figuring it out. But I think for me, there were greater challenges in and around our lives than that one particular moment. And it sounds crazy because it's life and death. It felt like we were always facing challenges that were life and death everywhere, and yet you had to show up and you had to continue. But I think when I think back to when the water made a meaningful difference back into my life was we were in high school and we just moved to the north, and there was a gym up the road, and we signed up for the gym, and I started teaching myself how to swim. And you know, when you swim on the side of the pool, so you swim, and then you hold on, and you swim, and then you hold on. And over time, you get more confident. And now, of course, I'm a very good swimmer, thank heaven. But the point is, the journey with the water has been a continuous space of fear, but embracing the fear to show up to these waters. And I never knew then that there was a deeper connection than I realize now. But it was continuously a space of walking with my fear, but choosing the possibility that I could be a swimmer too. And I think that was the difference for me.
So I want us to jump forward a little bit as well to your very first snorkeling experience. And I think from what I've read, it seems like this is where you truly fell in love with water and the ocean and nature. What was it about that very first view of the ocean floor that just really changed your perspective of the ocean and really the world? Because let's be honest, it really opened up something completely different for you that you've never experienced or even thought of before.
Oh my word. So 2016, I'm going through the most. I end up in Bali and sign up to this snorkel trip. Had I ever been snorkeling? No. Did I know how to use a mask and snorkel? No. And still I am on this boat. And I'll never forget, like, just before I jumped into the water, because the captain said, you know, everybody kit up. I didn't know what that meant. So I'm kind of looking around to see what everybody's doing so that I can do it. And this lady says to me, have you ever been snorkeling before? And I'm like, no, I haven't. And she's like, why didn't you say anything? I'm like, I come from Soweto. I would have figured it out. You know, I come from a world of figuring it out. And truth is, I would have never. But what followed was colors like I'd never seen in my life. Blue is like the sky, but you're surrounded in it. And this moray eel made its way into this coral reef that we're swimming over. The fish was so brightly yellow. And I just remember thinking, what the hell is going on? And the bottom of the corals were lit up so beautifully. I can still see that day. And it just felt like they were lit up from beneath. And it was just how the sun was dancing on the corals. My entire world was blown. Like, I did not understand what was going on. And a little bit later, we get to the second location that we're snorkeling at. We jump into the water. And the guy that was leading our snorkel trip, he kept on diving down. And he's coming up with these shells. And they're shiny and they're pretty and they're the most beautiful patterns. And again, I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? Who's shining the shells? What is going on? And I get to dive behind him on one of the moments that he's diving down. I dive behind him and I must have held my breath for maybe only 20 seconds, no more than that. And I just remember a feeling in my body, just this arriving, like this feeling of home, this feeling of belonging, this feeling of it changed my world. And I knew in that moment that I wanted to know more about these waters. And I wanted to know what it was like to live with this body of water. And I came back into South Africa and I'm like, what do people do after snorkeling? Everyone's like, scuba dive, of course.
That is the obvious next step, yes.
Oh my God.
From the office to the ocean. Having returned from her life-changing trip to Bali, Zandi knew there was simply no turning back. She was ready to exchange her corporate attire for scuba gear, but a number of challenges would block her path towards calling the waters home, from COVID to prejudice.
Now, soon after this experience, I believe that you exited the corporate world and you decided, you know what, I'm becoming a full-time diving instructor. You know, you went through the whole scuba thing, and surely your family and your loved ones, what was that like, trying to explain to them that, listen, this is where I want to be. This is it.
My whole family was mortified. Let's just start there. Mortified. And I think it's because, you know, you grow up and you've got responsibilities. You can't just like leave corporate and be like, I'll figure it out. But I did. And it was weird because when I qualify as a freediving instructor, it's 2020, we're just going into COVID. I've got this new shiny certificate. We're going into lockdown. The world is closing down. And it was such an interesting time because it was so introspective that I had a moment to honor what I was feeling, to honor the calling. What does this mean and what do I want to do with it? And so when I told my grandmother, she said, "Have you lost your mind?" I said, I probably have, but I'm going. And there was just this whole thing that said, "But what about your responsibilities? What about everything else?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'm going to have to figure it out." And over that year that followed was me spending all of my savings, you know, just kind of trying to figure it out. And thank heaven I landed on my feet, right? Because towards the end of the year, the brand partnership started coming on and that whole world just grew and grew. And when I moved to Cape Town, the foundation had already been registered, but we were going to start doing our work in Cape Town. And again, it was, I would get paid and then I would say, "Oh, I've paid my bills here. I've got 2,000 Rand. I'm going to take the kids out," right? And it was this whole world of knowing that I wanted to share this world that I'd found in all the ways I could. And it didn't matter how small that impact would be. But my whole family was, my family had a tough time. But I think when you land on your feet, everyone forgives you. I don't know what would have happened if I didn't land on my feet.
But once you started getting into the whole scuba thing, how long after that did you start free diving? Did you know about free diving at the time? Or was it just something you came across and you were like, "Hey, I want to try this"?
I did not even know what free diving was. So it was the end of 2018. So I started scuba diving end of 2016. 2018, I see these girls on social media. They are diving without tanks. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? But this video is so like immersive. There's Alan Watts, who's in the background, and there's tiger sharks. And there's these girls that are diving without tanks. And I'm thinking, what daylight witchery is this? Like, what's going on? Where are they tanks? How are they breathing? And legit, I go onto Google, diving without tank, and free diving comes up. And 2019, I end up in Swartwana Bay. We're diving, and then I come across, at that time, South Africa's only paddy free diving instructor who was qualified to teach right up to instructor level. So I'm like, "Oh my word, this is that thing that I found. Of course I want to sign up." And I go on the journey, and it was from that first moment, because again, scuba was amazing, but that feeling that I felt in Bali, it wasn't there. And it was crazy because I didn't understand why. That moment in 2019, June, as I held my breath underwater, there it was again. And I knew I was in the right direction. You could not get me to stop. I was one of those people where when you see me, you're like, "No, no, 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 no." Because all I could talk about was the water and the obsession and this incredible world that I'd found. And would everybody come and drink with me at this incredible watering hole?
So what was it about free diving that really grabbed you? You say that moment when you started holding your breath, that's when you kind of felt the same way you felt in Bali. But what was it about free diving that really connected with you?
I still cannot quite place the words for what it is. But I think it's something about witnessing the power of your breath, that one breath, and that it's just that all there is just that one breath, to see as much as you can and go as deep as you can. But I think it's also just the journey of challenging. I don't know, but freediving just felt like I was one with the water. And to this day, it still feels that way. It feels like you can hear the sea. You can hear all parts of her. You can hear the vibrant coral reefs. I often say, you know, people talk about the sea being a quiet place. I'm like, no, she's like Joburg and the highway and people having coffee in a restaurant. The corals are alive. They're little cities. And any sea that is quiet, you should be scared, right? You should be able to hear that coral crackling. You should be able to hear that life is, it's a metropolis around you.
So talk us through the process of a free dive. What does it take? And how long on average do you hold your breath?
So free diving is, I often say, it's not first about your breath hold. It's first about your ability to relax through discomfort. So if you picture just holding your breath for a minute or 2 minutes, you begin to get contractions. And those contractions is the discomfort with which you get to travel into the water. And so it's not denying that discomfort, but it's being with it. So it's preparing for your dive and you take a big, beautiful breath and you dive down to 30 meters, 35 meters, it could even just be 10 meters where you're playing in the shallows and you're having a good time with your friends. My longest breath hold at the moment is 5 minutes, but the average dive is 2 minutes, maybe 2.5. It's never really super long.
And where does your mind go during a free diving session?
You have to leave your body. This is the one thing that you must always remember. So if anybody ever tries free diving, go somewhere where there's a beautiful memory that lives there. Go visit it. So for me now, I love hearing everything. So when we're free diving and we're doing deeper free diving, you're attached to a rope, right? So the idea is you're attached to a rope just in case there's a current at the bottom of the ocean. You don't want to get swept away while you're on one breath. And so as you're descending, you just hear the line, right? You hear the line, you hear the ocean. And for me, I just close my eyes and I go on the journey, and it feels like you're in space. Because at a point, you're not thinning and you're just dropping to the bottom of the ocean. You become negatively buoyant and you just drop. And that drop is so, it's like you acquire, think of any favorite cartoon character where they fly or they, it's the same feeling. You're doing nothing and you're just taken by the water and you go on this incredible journey. And that for me still feels like the most unreal feeling that you can get in your human experience, because there's nowhere else that you can be in your body having that kind of experience where it feels like you're flying and there's this whole world and you're a part of this entire world. And somewhere along your dive, you don't even feel your body. You're just a being. Oh my word, it's spiritual. It is incredible.
It sounds magical. So I want to kind of get an idea, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be thinking like, okay, but where do you go with free diving? You know, what do you do beyond just free diving for yourself? So what is your ultimate free diving goal?
I still want to go deeper. You know, I have a number in my head, which is closer to 60, but I've always wanted to free fall longer. What is my goal? I want to free fall for like a solid minute and a half, 2 minutes, because often the free fall is from 15 meters and you go from there to 30 meters, which is about 15 seconds, or 35 meters, 20 seconds. Can you imagine experiencing a free fall for a minute? Wow. Or 2 minutes? It feels like an expansion in time in ways that I can't even fathom.
But I think a lot of people listening will also be thinking you're flirting with death and that you have a death wish. Mm. How would you respond to those individuals?
Yeah, and I can completely get it, right? Because it's that one breath. And if you don't get it right, what happens? Mm. I think there's such a powerful thing in facing our fears. I've often spoken about in that time in 2020, moving into 2021, that world of uncertainty, not knowing what happens in freediving, right? I could become a freediving instructor full time, but I also want to do more. And I always say that space of uncertainty is such a powerful place, that uncertainty is power, but also just stepping into everything, every single thing that causes you fear, it expands your world. And one of the most beautiful analogies that I thought of was, I don't know if you've seen Frozen, the movie, but when Elsa, she starts taking a step, and when she steps, it becomes ice and she moves into her power more and more. If we let fear dictate, we become small. But when we step into the things that frighten us, our worlds expand in ways we never even imagined. But the thing is, it's exponential because of the fear that lies between you and the possibility of what could be. So for me, there's so many things that we do in our day to day that is ultimately flirting with the same thing, right? To get into your car and drive to work, it's in all the moments that we choose to allow ourselves to step into places that frighten us, to step into that circle and see what could be. And for me, again, part of the work with freediving is that you do have to come to a place with death, right? If you're going to go deeper and deeper, it's the ultimate acknowledgement of realizing that one, I know I'm competent enough to do this. I'm trained to do this. My body is able to do this. So it's not that you're being irresponsible in any way, shape, or form, but it's the continuous space of how do you call yourself to order? You need to make sure that the ego doesn't enter the space. You're diving with other freedivers. They can dive deeper. On that day, you can't hit 30. You want to push past it because your ego wants to show that it's also a strong freediver. There's the little things that come into play when it comes into freediving. And that is on you. It's not on the water. But also to be trusted by the water is to know that you have your limits and you honor those limits.
Zandi has first-hand experience of the devastating impacts of climate change. Now, in collaboration with various conservation groups, Zandi is using her voice in the Only One campaign to save a species on the brink of extinction, the African penguin. Having experienced rapid population declines over the last 100 years due to overexploitation of food resources, predation and pollution, this unique bird species needs all the help it can get.
We recently visited Robben Island's African penguin colony on Carte Blanche, and we really witnessed firsthand how at risk this precious species is. And I know some of our listeners will think, listen, why are we making this random jump from free diving into penguins? But this is something you are very passionate about. You recently joined forces with the Blue Marine Foundation to really highlight the threats faced by African penguins. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So for me, I've always thought, you know, how my work has evolved. Yes, I'm a free diver. Yes, I work in ocean conservation, working to bridge that gap, right? But also species diversity is so important. Like when we think of our oceans, everything is interconnected from the African penguin right up to the most massive whales. What does it mean for us to show up? But also in our lifetime, are we going to see a species go extinct within 100 years? What could we do differently? And so we know that with the African penguin, we've lost 97% of this population. We need to take action. And I think there's such a powerful story to be told because African penguins are only found in South Africa and Namibia. And so if we lose the species, it's gone forever. I love to say penguins for me are such a reminder of human relationships. So like one penguin will find a life partner, right? So penguins live together. And it sounds crazy to say, but when you see penguin pairs, you realize that just like we are trying to protect us and our families and our species, they're just trying to do the same as well. And when you think that we have under 10,000 breeding pairs left, could we be the change? Could we be the ones that say 10 years later, I use my voice to try and protect the species and look where we are today.
I understand that there is a campaign. It's called the Only One campaign, and it's specifically focused on the African penguins and really pushing not only South African government, but also international leaders to really take action to help protect these species. So can you tell us a little bit more about that campaign specifically?
This is such an exciting campaign. I think it's always powerful when everybody can put their hands together. When you think of petitions, it's such a small action that has such a powerful impact in the world, right? It takes you 30 seconds, maybe a minute, to put your name down to say, hey, can we do better in ensuring that our marine protected areas are functional to ensure the protection of the species? It's not asking you to give money. It's not asking you to hand over your arm or something. It says, can you use your voice? Can you use your platform to ensure that we can rally around this work that we're doing together? The more people that we can get that back this work, the more we can take it to our government and say, hey, listen, we've got 6 African penguin colonies. Can we do better in ensuring that they've got enough food to be able to sustain themselves? Can we do better with plastic pollution? SANCOB is already a part of the work. BirdLife South Africa is already doing the work. Blue Marine Foundation is ensuring that there's a power and resources to be able to reach the highest level that we can. But we also need you, right? We need your signature. We need your voice. When we move together, when we use our voices, when we just try, in a world that is already asking so much of us, could we give a little bit more of ourselves?
In case our listeners want to learn more about the efforts to protect the African penguin, you can visit BirdLife South Africa. You can go to SANCOB's website, but you can obviously also keep an eye on Zandi's social pages for more on this campaign, which is so crucial. And I think really everyone needs to get involved in this. But then I also want people to know where they can go to find out more about the Black Mermaid Foundation. So where can they go? Is there a website? website? What is the best place for them to learn more about this really, really fantastic foundation?
blackmermaid.co.za. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter, Black Mermaid Foundation. I'd love for you to see our work. And if you're able to support us in any way, we are greatly appreciative of that as well.
Fantastic. Well, Zandi, unfortunately, that's all we have time for. I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed this chat and just learning more about your journey, about your mindset. I think it's your mind just seems like such a wonderful place to be. And I think a lot of us can learn something from this. So I hope our listeners will find inspiration in your story and really feel compelled to change the way they interact with the natural world around them. So thank you very, very much. Really, it's so inspiring and hopeful. So thank you for also bringing that hopeful energy into the conversation about climate change and protecting our natural species.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
That's another episode of Carte Blanche, the podcast done and dusted. Remember to follow and subscribe to our show on Spotify and all other major podcasting platforms. Have something to say? Join the conversation using hashtag Carte Blanche on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We love hearing from you.